Hi, everyone. I'm glad that you can hear us, and thanks for joining today. So my name is Caitlin, and I am a recruitment and outreach officer at the Institute of International Education. My region of expertise is the Middle East and North Africa, and I'm recognizing a lot of your names that we've corresponded by email or spoken on the phone already. So really, thank you so much for being here today. I'm going to have a short presentation. I'll kind of give you an outline of what's going to happen today. So I'm going to give a quick presentation about some of the awards in the region, and then I will spend a little bit of time going over the application process and offering some application tips. And then the bulk of our time today, I am going to have questions. You're going to have questions, and I'm going to have answers. And I see that many of you did actually submit questions prior to the webinar. I submitted them by email, or when you registered, you submitted some questions. So as we're going through, I'm going to try and answer as many of those as I can in the presentation. Some of them I've saved for the end. But you can also find answers to many of the basic questions about the program and applying on our website and in the catalog of awards. Okay, so let's jump in. So there are 29 awards to the region, producing multiple grants each, and a couple of highlights are on the screen here. In Israel, the United States Israel Educational Foundation plans to award 8 grants to U.S. postdoctoral scholars who seek to pursue research at Israeli institutions of higher education. These are very unique and prestigious grants. They're open to researchers in all academic disciplines, and they support programs for up to 20 months, so 1 or 2 academic years. Israel also offers a Senior Scholar All Disciplines Award for teaching and or research projects, and that particular award is 4 months in length. And so the Israeli Fulbright Commission welcomes your inquiries regarding potential host institutions and can assist in answering any questions you have regarding the grant experience to Israel. So I'm happy to provide that contact information to anyone that's interested. We also have Fulbright Scholar Awards to Jordan this year. We have only an all disciplines and a TEFL award, but nursing and business administration are also top priorities for the commission this year. The Fulbright Commission in Jordan is really great. They're extremely supportive of the grantee experience, and they also welcome inquiries from all applicants regarding potential host institutions and affiliations. The TEFL Award in particular is looking for scholars with a PhD in TEFL or TESOL, or second language acquisition, applied linguistics, or another related field, as well as some expertise in curriculum and materials development. So again, please reach out to the commission if you have any questions about potential hosts for Jordan. And then Morocco offers 2 awards for all disciplines. You can either apply sort of your traditional all disciplines award, or Morocco also offers a flex option, which can accommodate scholars who require multiple trips to Morocco to complete their proposed work. A letter of invitation is very strongly preferred for applications to Morocco, and we encourage you to reach out to potential hosts as early as possible. And this really goes for all of the countries in the Middle East. During the summertime, it is going to be more difficult to reach them. A lot of scholars will be off campus for the summer and currently are, you know, celebrating the Ramadan holiday. So you know, the earlier you reach out, the better, because it can be it can take a couple of weeks to hear back from them. And then another high priority award this year for us is Qatar, where you can spend 1 or 2 semesters teaching or conducting a combination of teaching and research activities. There's no research-only option for Qatar, but one of the big perks is that Qatar University, which is one of the 2 eligible hosts, they actually do offer housing, so that takes a big consideration, a big hurdle, kind of out of your way. So they're looking for someone with a PhD and at least 3 years of teaching experience, and it's really a fantastic place to do a Fulbright. And we also have in the West Bank, scholars can apply to teach and conduct research in all disciplines. And this year, the U.S. Consulate in Jerusalem has sort of expanded the list of potential hosts to 11 universities. That's been, you know, Jerusalem, Nablus, Ramallah, Hebron, Jenin, Birzeit, Bethlehem, and Tilkarim. So there are more of a variety of host institutions this year. And then Bahrain also offers a number of award opportunities in all disciplines of award, but also educational administration and teacher education, as well as business and economics. Those are priority disciplines in Bahrain. And you know, for Bahrain, what they're really looking for are people that are able to demonstrate how their field of study can contribute to promoting the country's economic future. So keep that in mind if you're applying to Bahrain. And the last award I wanted to highlight today is the All Disciplines Award to Tunisia, which is 10 months. So Fulbright to Tunisia will find that there is a really, you know, dynamic, rewarding environment, you know, where they can engage in teaching or a combined program of teaching and research. Applications are considered in all disciplines, and there are several disciplines that are going to receive priority consideration. And those, the list is long, but computer science, business administration, engineering, and American studies are all priorities for Tunisia. Okay, so moving on, I wanted to talk a little bit about FLEX and our regional research program. So we offer these two new exciting innovations in the region. We've been offering them for the last two to three years, I think. One of the questions that I received from one of you before the webinar was, you know, does this opportunity require, you know, an extended period of living abroad, or can intermittent travel be incorporated? So FLEX offers that possibility. The FLEX option was designed for scholars that require multiple visits to the host country over the shorter segment spread out over time. Each segment would be at least 1 month long, and the maximum length of the FLEX grant when you add up all the segments would be 6 months. So for example, you could conduct a grant in Kuwait that takes place over 3 months, one summer, and then you come home and go back to your home institution and do your teaching, your coursework, or whatever you have to do during the academic year, and then you could go back for another 3 months during the following summer. So in the MENA region, FLEX is only available in particular countries. It's not available everywhere, but Egypt, Kuwait, Morocco, the West Bank, Saudi Arabia, Tunisia, UAE, and the regional research program all offer FLEX. So the regional research program is another unique opportunity to consider. So scholars can apply to conduct research in two or more countries in the region, either over the course of one continuous grant segment or as a FLEX grant. So, for example, you could spend 2 months in Egypt, 2 months in Israel, and 2 months in the West Bank, all sort of in one go back to back, or you could spread those segments out over one or two academic years. So all countries are not eligible for this award, so notably Algeria and Tunisia cannot be included in proposals for this award. And a PhD is not required for the regional research program, but applicants will need to have a letter of invitation from each host country that they are planning to go to. Okay, and then before we discuss the application in more detail, I want to quickly review the basic eligibility requirements. U.S. citizenship is required. Permanent resident status is not sufficient. So this webinar today is for U.S. scholars. You have to have American citizenship. If there are any scholars that do not have U.S. citizenship that are looking to come to the U.S. to conduct research or to teach, you would want to look at the Fulbright Visiting Scholar Program, which I'm not going to be talking about today. And if we have any non-U.S. students that are interested in coming to the U.S. to complete their master's or PhD programs, you would want to take a look at the Fulbright Foreign Student Program, which I'm also not going to talk about today. And another eligibility requirement, depending on the award, is that a PhD or other terminal degree may be required. If we have anyone in the audience that is an American student that maybe very recently completed their bachelor's degree or have only a couple of years of professional experience, then the Fulbright U.S. Student Program would be more appropriate than the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. So for professionals and artists, recognized professional standing and substantial professional accomplishments are required in lieu of the terminal degree. So you do not necessarily have to have a master's or a PhD if you are a painter or you are, you know, there are lots of sort of different ways to meet that professional experience requirement. If you have any questions about whether you think that you would, you know, meet that requirement, just reach out to me and I'm happy to take a look at your resume and let you know. But a PhD is one kind of terminal degree. In other fields, an MFA is a terminal degree, or an MD, AD, an EdD. I've seen lots of, there are lots of different kinds of degrees out there. So if you have any questions about whether your terminal degree, your degree is considered terminal by Fulbright, please do reach out and I will make sure that it is. And then we do also require teaching experience at the level and in the field of proposed lecturing activity, and that is something that will again depend on the award description. And then if you've previously held a U.S. Scholar Grant within the past 2 years, there is a 2-year waiting period between the time of your last grant ending and the time that you're eligible to apply for another grant. So, for example, if your grant ended in the spring of 2017, you would then not be eligible to apply again until the spring of 2019 for awards that would start in 2020. So if you have any questions about whether you're eligible, if you've had previous Fulbright Scholar Grants, as long as there's a two-year waiting period, then you should be fine. Okay, so what exactly does the application look like? I'm sure many of you have been in there already, but it's pretty straightforward. The page limits that I mentioned today, they are hard limits, so if you go over or under, you'll probably be hearing from us to modify your application materials. So please don't make us do that. Read the directions and make sure that you're paying attention to the page limits. In addition to the standard form that you fill out online with your personal information, we ask for a 3-to-5 page project statement. Broadly speaking, this document would just be addressing what you're proposing to do, how you're going to do it, why the project is important, and what benefits it's going to produce for your host, you, and your home institution as well. In a couple of slides, I'm going to go a little bit into more detail about how to submit a competitive application, but in general, that's what you want to include in your project statement. You'll also need to submit a tailored CV of up to 6 pages. 6 pages is the maximum. Your CV would, you're going to have to trim it down, only include what is most relevant. A couple of tips, you can eliminate identifying information, so your phone number, your email address, your mailing address, you don't need to include that in your CV for us because it's going to be listed elsewhere in your application, so that should help you save some space. And you'll want to include all of your education and employment history, but you can sort of limit previous awards or grant scholarships to only what is relevant. And then try to include as many publications as you can, but you can keep conference presentations and exhibits to a minimum. You don't need to include every single thing that you've ever published, but keeping it to maybe the things that are most prestigious or most relevant to your project that you're proposing to do. And then academic service and professional affiliations can be cut down pretty dramatically, as can languages, because that is going to be explained in detail in another part of your application. But ultimately, you should use your best judgment and include only what is necessary to help the reviewers answer the review criteria. So 3 letters of reference are required. If you are proposing to teach, one of those letters would need to come from someone that can speak about your teaching abilities. We have requirements for submission of references on our website, but I want to underscore that applicants must register their referees in the online application, and references must be submitted via the online application. We cannot accept mailed-in references, and you cannot submit a reference for someone. You will register their name, their email address on the online application, and then click register. When that happens, they will get an email saying you've been registered to be a referee for this person, and they will need to fill it out themselves. Okay, so where was I? Okay, so 3 letters of reference required. They all need to be submitted online. Also, so if you're proposing to teach, you're going to need to submit a 2 to 3 different syllabi or course outlines to give us a sense of your teaching style and teaching philosophy. They can be from a class that you've taught in the past, or they can be something new that you've designed for this particular course that you're planning to teach wherever you're going. But you need to include at least 2 of them. And they would be up to 10 pages total. It should be designed by you, and you should indicate whether it is something you've used previously or if it's something that you've developed. We'll want to just know that. If you're conducting research, we will need to see a 3-page bibliography, which is more like a lit review without all of the extensive annotations. So it should reflect the current state of research on the proposed topic and include articles written by scholars other than just yourself. If you are an applicant in the fine arts, you know, the bibliography might look a little bit different. You know, use your best judgment. You can sort of, you can cite other scholars, other artists' work. You know, there are a lot of different ways to do it. If you have any questions about whether your bibliography is appropriate for your field, you know, if you're a professional, it, you know, this might be something a little bit different if you don't. But anyway, if you have any questions about the bibliography, please reach out to me, and I'm happy to you know, give you some guidance on that. And then depending on the award, there may be some language proficiency required. So if you're planning to teach, you really should make sure to confirm with your host institution what the language of instruction is going to be. And then for research projects, language fluency sufficient to complete your research project is required. So, you know, what does this mean? It means that if you don't speak Arabic or French, note this in the application and in your project statement and in the language proficiency report, you need to talk about whether you plan to work with a translator or if you can feasibly complete the project in English. If you're going to be working in a lab in Tel Aviv, you know, you can explain that, you know, Hebrew is not required because the general language of instruction is going to be English and everyone speaks English. So just make sure that you're including that in your project statement. So non-native speakers who have Arabic, French, Hebrew abilities that they're planning to use during their grant will need to complete a two-part language proficiency report. Part one is a self-evaluation, and part two is going to ask you to register an external evaluator within the application. This part of the report is going to be completed by, you know, an appropriate foreign language instructor through the online application reference system. And there are also supplemental materials required for applicants in the arts, architecture, writing, and journalism. On that note, we did have a question related to supplemental materials. The question was, I'm a visual artist researching contemporary Moroccan ceramics with the intention of including this research in an illustrated monograph that I will write. Do I need to submit supplemental materials, and if so, what should they be? So this depends on whether for the illustrated monograph, there will be illustrations of your creation or pictures of these ceramic pieces that you're describing in the monograph. If you're creating the illustrations, then you would need to submit supplemental materials, which would be just images of your work. If you're taking pictures of the ceramics and then writing about them, then you would not need to submit supplemental materials. So that would be if it's more like a book on art history with pictures. Or if you are going to take the ceramics or the materials or patterns or whatever and make new art with them, for that you'll need to submit supplemental materials that would demonstrate your facility with the style of art that they're creating in. So it really depends on the nature of the project. So to that person that asked the question, if you want to get in touch with me and provide more details, I can hopefully help. Hopefully that answered your question. Okay. And then depending on the award that you apply to, a letter of invitation may be required. The letter of invitation is an expression of interest from a host institution. There are no specific requirements for these letters other than it needs to be on official letterhead and it needs to include dates, the dates that you're being invited for. But what it might include is, you know, what you're being invited to do, and good letters will offer a description of the host's interest in your project. The letter would be, like I said, on official letterhead, and if it's not in English, you will need to include an English translation of it along with the original. So how do you get a letter? If you do not have any contacts in your country of interest or the contact information, which is not already listed in the award description, which it often is, we have some recommendations. Use the resources on your home campus, such as the International Office or some of your colleagues. You can take a look at our scholar directory as well, which lists the names, project titles, countries, and host institutions of previous Fulbrighters. And our alumni are very helpful people, so if you see someone who has previously gone to the country you're proposing to go to, or they went to the institution you're interested in, You can reach out to them to ask for an introduction to their contacts. But also, Google is your best friend. Look at the university's websites in your host country and locate contact information for different departments. More often than not, you can find this information just with a couple of keystrokes. We do not keep the names or contact information of people at specific institutions unless it's listed in the award description. So this part is going to require some hard work on your part. Okay, and then broadly speaking, this is a competitive application process, and therefore your proposal is going to need to be three main things. It needs to be clear, it needs to be concise, and it needs to be compelling. Each individual's application should be about the candidate, how the grant time will be spent, and what outcomes can be reasonably expected. With the project statement, it is, you know, it's a brief self-introduction to reviewers, but it's an opportunity for you to provide answers to the questions they may have. And some of those questions that I hear during every review meeting, why are you interested in a Fulbright Award and why to this particular country? That's really important to answer. What professional experiences and skills do you offer the host institution and host country? Don't simply regurgitate your resume. We'll be reading that and be able to see where you've been, but elaborating on some of those experiences to talk about how they're going to contribute to your ability to carry out a grant is what we're looking for. And then what do you hope to gain from the experience? What are the long-term impacts for you and for your home institution? And then really do focus on what you plan to do. We did receive a question earlier, what three things would make one application stronger than another? So talking about the impacts to the host institution, the host country is definitely one. Demonstrating a commitment to the Fulbright mission. And the mission statement is on our website to promote mutual understanding between people, the U.S. and people of other countries through educational exchange. So talking about how your project is going to help promote that goal of mutual understanding, that will help your application stand out. But then also just project statements that are organized. If you're able to use bullet points and headers and make it easy for the reviewers to find the information that they need, it'll take a lot of the work off of them. So a lot of much stronger applications will also have that as well. Okay, and then just to go briefly over the timeline, I'm sure many of you have already heard a lot of this. Applications are due on August 1st. After that, the applications will be reviewed by program staff at IIE for technical completeness. You may hear from us. This is where if you go over the page limits, we'll email you and say, you need to cut down your project statement or whatever. From there, discipline-specific committees will review the application. They will provide comments for the U.S. peer review committees, which meet a little bit later in the fall. These will be Fulbright alumni that went to the geographic region that you're proposing to go to, but they may not necessarily be in your discipline, which is why we have the discipline-specific committee comments for the peer review committees. Those meetings are in person. We'll talk about every single application, and then from there, the peer reviewers will either recommend or not recommend your application for further review. If your application does make it through that round and is going to be sent overseas for further review, that will, the host country will take a look at the application and they will make the ultimate decisions about whether they want to host the project or not. You'll hear about whether your application is going overseas for further review around Thanksgiving. And then the host countries that are making decisions, that notification timeline is fairly broad. Each country kind of gets back to us on their own timetable. And then also the State Department is going to be taking a look at the applications as well. So you'll get notified of final approval if you are selected for a grant. I would say most don't hear as early as February, but March would maybe be the earliest that you would hear back. And then May would be the latest that you would hear from us. But we really do try to get those notifications as early as we can. And then over the summer, there would be a pre-departure orientation. You would go out on your grant the following fall. So it's a sort of a whole year-long process of review between the time that you submit your application and when you would be going out on your grant. Okay. I wanted to post show you guys a couple of resources. So listed on the screen are a couple of resources on our website. The website offers a lot of information about the project statements, letters of invitation, and the other application components, so you should really review those web pages before you begin your application. And then also I'd like to quickly announce that we are going to be hosting application walkthroughs and advising sessions on July 18th, 25th, and July 30th. These sessions are going to be designed to answer your questions about how to complete the online application. So if you're interested, please reach out to outreach@iie.org. We can send you the link to register for those webinars if you are interested. Okay, so now I would like to open the virtual floor to your questions. I can see many of you already have, but you can go ahead and type them into the chat box on your screen if you haven't already. So I'm going to start kind of going through these. There's a couple of frequently asked questions on the screen. I see, can I apply to the all disciplines category in two different countries? No, you can only apply to one award each year. So yes, you can only apply to one. Okay, I'm reading through your questions. Okay, so I have a question about whether the flex option is available for Sudan or Cyprus for the Global Scholars Award. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about Global today, but if you are interested, I did conduct a webinar a couple of weeks ago just on the Global Award, and flex is an option for Global. I don't know whether Sudan individually or Cyprus individually offers flex, but I do know that for Global, they do. Okay, so I'm going to go through a couple of questions that were submitted ahead of time by email, and also hopefully it'll be helpful for you to kind of see where you can find some of this information. So I'm going to take you to the website. That's my email. So I hope all of you are seeing this, but we have a question about whether a university affiliation list is posted. And so I want to quickly show you where you can find that in the catalog. So this particular individual was asking about Oman. So if we go to Oman and search all awards, the award for Oman is showing here. I want to make sure you guys are seeing this. Can you, in the chat box, just let me know that you can see the catalog? Okay, good. So you click on the award description, and this is where you're going to find the bulk of the information that you need to know about the awards. So if you go scroll down just a little bit, you'll see there's a little tab that says locations. And so for Oman, these are the locations that have been approved by the U.S. Embassy in Oman. But then you'll also see here, other host institutions can be considered on a case-by-case basis. This will be different for every award, so just make sure that you are going into the award description. Most of that information is going to be right at your fingertips. Another question related to the award description is, do I need to know the native tongue to teach English in countries of the said region? So this you can also find in the award description. So this would be under the next tab over, the award requirements, and you'll be able to scroll down and it says language requirements. And for each award, this will be different, but it's saying, for Oman, for example, if you're teaching in certain fields, it will be in English. But for, perhaps other disciplines, English would be required. That's something also that you'll want to discuss with your host institution when they're writing a letter of invitation for you. Make sure that they're saying the language of instruction is going to be English. So work that out with them ahead of time. And then the final thing that I wanted to highlight in the award descriptions, it's a couple of questions about what are the award benefits, like what is the salary going to look like, and that I feel like my answer to this always is it depends on the award. But you can navigate over to this third tab, which has the award benefits, to give you a general sense of what the stipend might be. There's a range here, and where you fall on this spectrum will likely depend on either the kind of grant that you're doing. If you're doing only research, then you would be in this category up here. But if you're planning to do teaching, the stipends tend to be a little bit larger. And then where you fall on the spectrum would depend on a couple of things: your academic rank, the number of dependents that you're bringing with you, the city that you're going to be in. Sometimes there's different stipend levels for different cities. So this is just intended to give you a general idea of, you know, where you might be on that. Ultimately, the stipend levels are something that would be negotiated if you are selected for an award. So this will give you a general idea, but you know, what that's actually going to look like is something that you would talk to your advisor about if you are selected for a grant. And then in addition, there are a couple of other benefits that you can find here. There will be a travel relocation allowance. Your round trip economy class flight would be covered, and then depending on your activity, there may be some book or research allowance as well. And then also depending on the country, there may be dependent tuition reimbursement available. Or if you wanted to bring any accompanying dependents that are anywhere through K through 12, and you would submit receipts, and then based on the availability of funds, we would reimburse you for the cost of your kids' education. So those are all things that I just wanted to note that you can find all of those in the award description. I've also seen a couple of questions: is such and such country approved for doing only research? And that's another thing that you can find in the award description. Over on the side here, under activity, it will say what kinds of activities you can do. So for Oman, you know, all three activity types are available. But if you wanted to go and take a look at, I think the question I saw was Egypt. And let's see, yes, all three activities are available. So that's another little area that you can use to help you answer some of your questions. Okay. So I did also want to show you, we had a question, what are the review criteria? And this is something you can find on our website. If you go to CIS.org and Programs U.S. Scholars and go to the core program, this is going to be the holy grail of information for you guys. If you head over to the application tab, the review criteria are already posted here. So I really recommend that if you're going to have a colleague review your application, to print these out for them and say, review my application based on these criteria. They, you know, may be reviewing it based on their knowledge of a different kind of grant, and NSF grant is looking for something very different. So just make sure that anyone that reviews your application for you, and you really should have you know, a couple of people take a look at your application before you submit it, but to have them take a look at these review criteria as they're going through it. But these are all questions that will come up during the meeting. We actually print out these review criteria at the meetings on a big poster board. And if the conversation sort of starts to veer off in a different direction, we sort of veer it back and say, okay, well, what does this have to do with the feasibility? And so if an application is recommended or not recommended, it is going to be based on these review criteria that are listed here on this page. Another very useful piece of information is the application guidelines. If you go into the application guidelines, you'll be able to find a nice little checklist of everything that you're going to need to include in your application, and then also you can kind of follow through the links to get more detailed information or guidelines about specific parts of the application. So that's another really helpful part of the website that I hope you will all take the time to review. Okay, so a really good question here. Is it okay to emphasize in my application the great experience of my first MENA Fulbright? Are there any pitfalls in emphasizing my last Fulbright? So you will need to provide a compelling justification for a repeat Fulbright, and that is something that you'll see in the review criteria. If you are a former Fulbrighter, you will need to answer that question, you know, and provide some evidence of the outcomes and sustained professional, institutional, or professional ties resulting from your previous Fulbright grant. And then you'll want to explain how a subsequent Fulbright grant will build on the previous one. So yes, do speak about your previous grant and what a great experience it was, but make sure that you're talking about the questions that are listed in the review criteria. And I would say don't dwell on your previous grant too much. You know, you only have 3 to 5 pages for your entire project statement, but I think a short paragraph somewhere in your project statement would be appropriate. Another question, can I use parts of last year's application in my field? Can I use parts of last year's application this year? Okay, so the new application won't pre-populate, so you will need to refill out the application just in terms of the online, you know, information part that you'd be filling out. But in terms of the pieces of your application from last year, you know, you're free to reuse your project statement, your CV, your bibliography, your syllabi, but you will need to have new letters of invitation and new letters of reference. And I would assume that you probably have all of those documents, all those files with you, but if you don't have your project statement from last year, you can reach out to us and we can send it to you. Will the Fulbright Grantee Directory website be updated? So the directory is updated every October. So you can look forward to that, and I will actually show you guys where what this person was talking about. If you want to go to our scholar directory, actually if you go just to the home page, you can find it down here, view the Fulbright Scholar Directory. And this will give you an opportunity to see where people have gone, what their projects were like, if you wanted to, example, look for U.S. Scholar Corps grants that were in Morocco, in the arts. You would do that. You would click do a search, and a list of projects would populate down here. My internet speed is a little slow today, folks. But this is where then you could go in to the particular person's little profile, and you can see where they went, who their host was. So this is a good place to get an idea for hosts. And you can take a look at their project title. We don't include the contact information for these people, but because they're faculty, you can pretty easily Google them and find their university email by doing that. So that is the scholar directory. Okay. Another question, is there a need in nursing education or research? Yes. So that's another thing that you'll want to take a look at the catalog. You can search by keyword nursing. You just type nursing in. But for the Middle East region, I can say that in Jordan and in the West Bank, nursing is a large priority. So I would sort of direct you to look at those two awards first. Does the date of submission of the application matter? As long as you get it in by the deadline, which is August 1st, it doesn't matter. If you submit it early, you know, that's lovely. It'll give us a little bit more time perhaps to start our technical review of applications early. It's really up to you. Just make sure that it's in by August 1st. Is it possible to be accepted as a Fulbright Scholar with only a BA degree, or is it better to have a master's for acceptance? So this really depends on the award, but generally you need a PhD or other terminal degree or a ton of professional experience to be eligible for this program. So if you have only a BA and a couple of years of experience, you'll definitely want to apply to the Fulbright U.S. Student Program. And then a lot of questions here about dual citizenship, or is it an advantage to have visited the country prior to getting awarded a grant? I'm a dual citizen. Would I stand a chance? Is this an asset or an obstacle? And so Fulbright generally does give priority to individuals who haven't had significant experience in the country they're proposing to go to. However, countries in this region often do want to see applicants who are able to, who have prior experience in the region and can handle the developing countries and more sort of challenging environments. So it's really a matter of how you frame it. You need to frame it as an advantage in terms of your cultural knowledge, your language skills, in terms of your connections on the ground. You do also want to talk a bit about, you know, what new connections you're planning to get. You know, how are you going to be building on your previous experiences in the country, not just kind of going back to do what you've done every summer for the last 15 years. So, and then technically there's no issue with dual citizenship, and that will vary from award to award, but the two questions that I got were for Morocco and Israel, and there's no issue with dual citizenship. Okay, more questions. For teaching or teaching research awards, what is the best way to propose or suggest what courses one should teach? You should talk to your host institution. Ask them what they need you to teach. You can provide them with a couple of ideas, but I found that most successful applicants have been able to kind of ask what kinds of courses, and they'll be able to kind of design them in collaboration with the host institution. Okay, how much research experience do most applicants have? Can you share some tips for professionals who are applying? So for the research experience, just make sure that you're reviewing the award to make sure that you're eligible and qualified. They will, you know, the award descriptions will usually have a pretty detailed eligibility criteria where they talk exactly about what they're looking for. So then, you know, just make sure that your application materials demonstrate that you're qualified and capable to carry out your proposed project. And then for professionals, the program is generally open to professionals. So when you explore the catalog, you can use filters to view the awards that are open to professionals. The general materials required to apply are the same for professionals as for academics. But how you demonstrate that you're qualified and able to undertake and successfully complete your project may look a little bit different. So now that professionals have participated in the Fulbright program previously, and so you should just consider accessing perhaps the alumni directory as well to locate other professionals in your field that you could potentially reach out to and ask about how they approach things in their application. Do you have to have IRB approval before the application is submitted? No, it's not required. It's okay to mention it in your project statement, but that is something that we try to leave up to the scholar and their home institution. Okay. I see a long list of questions here. When are the workshops in July again? I don't have them in front of me, but if you go to our website, you can find them on the webinars list. I can send that out to you guys. And if any of you are interested in those, just email outreach@iie.org, outreach@iie.org, and I can just send you the link to register for them. Okay, and will this webinar be recorded? Yes, this webinar is being recorded, and it will be posted onto our website, hopefully about within 5 to 7 working days. So if you want to listen to it again or share it with a colleague, it will be up for you. Can you defer for a year if you receive it? No, you cannot defer Fulbright. If you receive one and you decide not to take it, then you would need to go through the same application process again the following year or whatever year you decide to reapply. Do you have a sample research bibliography showing how it's more of a literature review rather than a list of citations? I don't have a sample, but what I meant by that comment, it would not just be you citing references from your project statement. So we do get a lot of questions, should I cite things in my project statement? You can, but you're not required to. So the bibliography in your project statement don't necessarily need to correspond directly in terms of what is cited. You would just want to give a good range of different things that have been published relative to the topic that you're proposing to do, so that the discipline reviewers can take a look at it, and because they're in your discipline, they will most likely be recognizing a lot of those articles, and they'll say, okay, yes, this person is citing all of these right things, that's correct, this is kind of, I see where her project fits in with some of this previous research. You can provide a couple of comments if you wanted to talk about, what the article was about, but it's very short, it's only 3 pages, so you want to really keep that to a minimum. Okay, what is the deadline for the letter of invitation, and what is the deadline for the letters of reference? So officially, the deadline for everything is August 1st. That said, we understand that the letter of invitation sometimes can take some time. So if you do not have the letter of invitation at the time of application, you'll probably hear from us and we'll ask you what's going on with that. Just let us know that you're still working on it. I don't know if there's a hard set deadline on that, but we're usually able to accept the letters of invitation a couple of weeks after the application deadline, but we will absolutely need them by the time the applications would be going to peer review, which is usually very early October, sometimes even in September. So there's a couple of weeks maybe of grace period, but not much beyond that. And then the same would go for letters of reference. We can kind of wait a couple of days, a week, 2 weeks. So there is a grace period for those, but there is no grace period for the rest of your application, your project statement, your bibliography, your CV, all of that is due August 1st. But the letters, we do have a little bit of a grace period. Can current Fulbright specialists apply to the Fulbright Scholar Program? Yes, there's no limitation with the Fulbright with Specialist and Scholar Program. So you can be on the specialist roster and apply for a core grant. The only limitation is that you couldn't be doing both grants at the same time. So if you are out on a Fulbright U.S. Scholar Grant and you get a call from the specialist saying, do you want to do the specialist grant, you couldn't do it at the same time that you're doing a core grant. You can remain on the roster. Who are included in the review committees, professional academics or ministers? So the review committees, I think I mentioned, are the regional reviews. They're going to be Fulbright alumni that either went to the country that you are proposing to go to or somewhere in the region. So they'll be academics, but not necessarily within your field. In terms of what it looks like on the host side, that varies from country to country. So if you're applying to Israel, for example, the Fulbright Commission would be the review committee. But if you're applying to what we call a post country, which is really any country other than Egypt, Morocco, Jordan, or Israel, the reviewers then would be people in the U.S. Embassy. Okay, in countries like Algeria or Tunisia, how would we get paid? Is it through the embassy? So you'll be paid through CIES, through IIE. If you're selected for a grant, there's a lot of paperwork you'll have to fill out. You will give us some direct deposit information, and your stipend would be deposited into your U.S. account. Okay, if an applicant is a U.S. citizen but already living in the country of interest, are they still eligible for Fulbright? That's a good question. So there is one eligibility question there. So if you have lived abroad for more than 5 out of the last 6 years, then you would not be eligible. So it depends on how long you've been there. Um, a question about tax obligations for Fulbright grants. So we don't advise on taxes. I know that there is a specific IRS statute or something related to Fulbrights, but that's something that you will want to talk to an accountant about, or Google it and it'll pop up for you. But that's not something that IIE or your advisors at IIE would be working on with you. Does a host institution choose your course offering based on institutional interest, or do the peer reviewers decide in the U.S.? So you would be corresponding with your host beforehand, because you would be soliciting, of course, a letter of invitation from them, and that's something you would go back and forth with them on, about whether, what courses they're interested in. You would establish that with them. That information would be included in your application and in your letter of invitation. From there, it's really based on, what happens when you get on the ground. The hosts, the peer reviewers in the U.S. don't decide what courses you teach. You propose that in your application. What is the maximum number of countries we are allowed to apply to in our one award application? So if you are applying to a single country, if you're applying, for example, to the Egypt All Disciplines Award, you would only be applying to Egypt. No other countries you're applying to. If you happen to be applying for the Middle East Regional Research Program, you can apply to two or three countries. So the maximum would be three. And then if you're applying for the Global Award, the maximum also would be. That's only if you're doing a multi-country award. How do we go about finding an external language evaluator? I would say go on your home campus, talk to the foreign languages department and see if any of the professors would be willing to. And it's a very short little form that they fill out, but I would recommend tapping your institutional resources. What is a typical language evaluation like? So there's no test. It's two parts. One is just a very simple self-evaluation. I'm advanced in speaking. I am, advanced in writing or whatever. You will assess yourself. And then the second part of the language evaluation is just a very short couple of questions that the reviewers will answer for you. And the language evaluators are registered in the same place that you would be registering your letters of reference. So it's something that they would receive an email, they would fill it out online. You wouldn't be submitting it for them. Oh, good. Okay, I have some helpful comments. Question about the July workshops, what dates were they? They're on the 18th, the 25th, and the 30th of July. How can we contact you with further questions? The award descriptions will say on the side, on the same sort of area where you can find the activity types, will have the email address listed for the person responsible for that award. For awards in this region, it is the email address is MiddleEastNorthAfrica@IIE.org, and you can find that in the award descriptions. Feel free to contact me with further questions. We can correspond by email. Sometimes where appropriate, if we need to do a phone call to kind of dig into things a little bit deeper, I can also send you a link to sign up for a phone call with me to discuss anything else. Okay, can you ever get feedback from the peer review on your application for the future? No. So the peer review is confidential, and we are not able to provide any feedback for you, unfortunately. Okay, I'm going to scroll back up to the top because I see there are a couple of questions up at the top I didn't get to. Medical insurance is not listed in the award benefits section. Is insurance mandatory, and are the costs compensated? So if you're selected for a grant, you would receive medical coverage, but it isn't comprehensive insurance. It's not meant to cover pre-existing conditions. It's really intended to cover any accidents that might happen or things that happen to you while you're on your grant. So it isn't mandatory to get additional insurance, but we do highly recommend it. Talk to your current insurance company to see if they offer any additions on top of your current health insurance, or there are many reputable insurance places that do only international insurance, but we do recommend that, but it is not required. And the costs of it are not compensated. That would be something you would cover out of your stipend that you would receive. Okay, the request of university that is not listed in the award description, when do I do that? And would other universities listed still be considered? Okay, so if there's a host institution that you want to go to and it is not listed in the award description, you want to make sure that it's okay, email me, MiddleEastNorthAfrica@IIE.org, and I will speak with the U.S. Embassy, Consulate, or the Fulbright Commission overseas to double check to make sure that it is eligible. Can a blog be submitted with the application? If so, in what section of the application? No. So the application components that I discussed today are what you should be including. If you include anything extra, we'll unfortunately have to remove it. So I would say try to fit whatever you're trying to say into your project statement. Did you say there are only two awards? So what I meant when I said only two awards to Morocco, there's two different kinds of awards is what I meant to say. There's a regular all disciplines award and there's a flex option. So you can go for a longer period of time all in one long segment, or you can split your grant up into multiple shorter segments. There's more than two, I think we award quite a few to Morocco. So it wouldn't be only two people, it's just two different types of awards. Is a language proficiency report required for a teaching grant if the language of instruction is in English? So no. You can fill out the part one of the report, which you'll probably, if you don't have Arabic language proficiency, you would just say, I don't have language proficiency in Arabic, but the language of instruction is in English, so it isn't required. And that's all you would say, really simple two or three sentences. So you would fill out part one, but the part two external evaluator you would not need to do if your project is going to be, your teaching or your research project are going to be in English. Can maps, iResearch port cities along the Arabian coast, can maps I made serve as supplemental material? That's a really good question. I'm assuming that you're a geographer, and that's not one of the disciplines that allows for supplemental materials. But email me and I will, I've never had that question before, so I can float that up and see what others think. I'm told by some contacts in Qatar that letter of invitation is not required because Qatar accepts all the Fulbright scholars. Is this true? No, it's not true. They don't accept everyone. And for the letter of invitation, you have to check and see if it's required. I don't recall for Qatar if it is. But if you are able to get a letter of invitation, you should. Application requirements is strongly preferred. So what that means, if the language in the award description says a letter of invitation is strongly preferred, that means that if you don't submit a letter of invitation, your application would be at a pretty significant disadvantage because there may be another couple of people that applied that did include a letter of invitation. So if it says that in the award description, then you'll want to pursue one. Would an applicant hear earlier than March if their applications are not moving forward to the next phase? So yes, if your application does not make it through to overseas review, you would be finding out about that around Thanksgiving. So that's the first round of reviews you'll hear from us, and we'll let you know whether it's going forward or if it's not. I'm a political scientist and concerned about my topic being cleared by the host country. Can you tell us if this has been an issue for political science in MENA recently? This would be helpful to know in crafting our application. So it depends on the host country and whether ministry approval is required to be able to do your research. And usually that will be noted in the award description. I think it really does come down to how diplomatic you are and how you phrase it. And there are certain countries where it's more of an issue than others. And I think if you're a scholar of the region, you can probably guess which ones those are. But if you have concerns, do reach out to me and I can talk to the whichever program officer is responsible at the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs at the State Department just to double check about whether they think it would be approved. But it would mostly, I think Egypt can sometimes be more of a hurdle, and sometimes the Gulf countries, UAE, Saudi Arabia, it's very rare for an applicant to be selected and then not get research approval. So I would say try to use be as diplomatic as you can when you're talking about what your research topic is going to be. I know we're kind of getting close to the end of the time here, but I want to try and answer the rest of your questions. So we're going to go a little bit over time. Okay. I had a Fulbright to Lebanon in 2010. Will it negatively impact my application to focus on my application on this very positive prior experience? No, it won't negatively impact your application. I think, like I said earlier, you do want to talk about your previous experiences. It's required. It's part of the review criteria for former Fulbrighters, but you don't need to really dwell on it. Include a couple of sentences, talk about, you know, what you learned and how it was a positive experience and how you're planning to build on that, just to sort of acknowledge it and make a case for why you should be given another award. Okay, I'm reading a couple more of your questions. Okay, this is an interesting one. Is it possible to apply in August for one type of grant and then apply again the following year for a different type of grant? So if you're selected for a grant and then you want to reapply the next year, you could not do that because there needs to be a two-year waiting period. So you couldn't, for example, apply to Morocco this year, get the grant, be planning on going out, and then apply to be able to go out the following year to Egypt. There would need to be a two-year waiting period. If you apply for something 1 year and you're not selected for a grant and you want to sort of reapproach it the next year and apply for something different, that's a different story, and many do. So you can change your tax the following year, but not if you were selected for a grant. Okay, for the multi-country grant, is it possible to apply for one non-MENA country and one MENA country? No. If you want to apply to countries that are in more than one world region, then you'll want to apply for the Global Scholar Award. The countries that are eligible are listed in the award. Okay. Question about how does CIS help professors get released from their teaching obligations for the year Fulbright is granted? So that is something that we do not get involved with. That is between you and your department. I would recommend taking a look at the scholar directory to see whether anyone from your home institution has had a Fulbright before. And if they have, approach them and talk to them about how they worked it out. You can also talk to your Fulbright scholar liaison. So we have representatives on campus that are sometimes Fulbright alumni, sometimes not, but they go through some pretty rigorous training to be Fulbright advisors on your campus. And you can talk to them about what the university's policies are. I know it varies from university to university, so that is definitely something to talk to your department chair. My piece of advice would be to reach out and talk to them as soon as possible. Let them know that you're applying, and particularly if you make it through the peer review and you hear back around Thanksgiving that you're going to be reviewed overseas, to let them know early on so that if there is any contingency plan that you need to put together to sort of, you know, arrange someone covering your teaching obligations for the year of your Fulbright, planning that out earlier on instead of, you know, finding out in May and then telling them, oh, I'm not going to be here this fall. Telling them early on usually helps that answer to be a yes instead of a no. Oh, okay, so you're an architect. So the person that asked about whether they could submit maps, if you're an architect, yes, you can submit them as supplemental materials. Do we keep the healthcare coverage from our institution, or is it covered by the grant? That is another thing that is up to you and your home institution about what kind of benefits they will be continuing for you. So, you know, talk to your department chair about it. Talk to your Fulbright scholar liaison. Talk to Fulbright alumni about it. And then, like I said, we do have limited health coverage, but comprehensive insurance is something that you would want to arrange yourself. If we have language skills but the skills are not required, should we still list this information on a self-evaluation or leave it blank? I think you should still fill it out. I mean, it takes 2 minutes to fill it out, so I think that it'll give you an advantage. Even if the skills aren't required, you know, it can kind of show that you have the cultural experience, that you'll be able to navigate the region more easily with the language skills. So definitely still fill it out. If we applied last year and were not selected, do we state in the application that we are reapplying? You don't need to. I would say don't. You don't need to mention that you're reapplying. Is Tunisia part of the Flex Awards? Let's take a look and see in the award description. I'll say if we go to all disciplines, we go to Tunisia, flex option, yes. So the flex option is available for Tunisia. Okay, should I pursue one letter of invitation? So you can pursue as many letters of invitation as you want. And I actually think that's a good idea to kind of cover your bases and see where would be the best fit. And frankly, you know, some universities just won't get back to you. So I think pursuing multiple letters is a good idea. However, you will only be able to include a letter of invitation from one institution. Unless you're applying for the regional award. If you're applying for the regional award and you're going to multiple countries, you'll need a letter from each country you're going to. But if you're applying to a single country, all disciplines award, one letter of invitation. You, of course, you know, if you're planning on working with more than one institution, make sure that your main host, you'll need to have one that's sort of your main host, that they know about it. And if they want to include that in their letter of invitation, saying, we know that Dr. So-and-so is also going to be doing some workshops at this other university, just to, you know, the acknowledgement so that we know that they're sort of on board with that is a good practice. It's not required, but I think would be a good idea. Okay. So I see there are a couple more questions, but they are really specific. Let's see, what do I contact the university directly through Fulbright contact or Fulbright contact country? So you can reach out directly. You don't need to reach out through us. You would be reaching out yourself. We don't need to be involved in your solicitation of letters of invitation. So I see there are a couple more questions. They're really specific. So to the couple of you that I didn't get to your question, I see them, but I think it would be better for us to talk about this offline, either through email or perhaps we could do a phone call. So just reach out to me. I'll show you again where you can find my email address. It's listed right here in all of the award descriptions, Middle East North Africa at IIE.org. This phone number is, you'll probably get my voicemail. The best way to get in touch with me is to email me, and I will send you a link where you can sign up for a phone call if you want one. So that would be the best way to reach out to me. Okay. All right. Well, we went a little bit over time, but thank you all so much for attending. I really look forward to reading your applications, and if you have any questions, I'm here to help. So I hope to be hearing from many of you. Have a great rest of your week and rest of your day. Thank you, everyone.